Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called How to Turn Suffering into Insight and Use It to Propel Your Life into Something Amazing. As a cardiologist, Dr. Terry Gordon has seen some of his life's most tragic events and has always lived by the principle that it's not what happens to us that matters, but how we deal with it. His philosophy was put to a personal test when he got a phone call that changed his life. His son was in a terrible accident, and although he was alive, he would be a quadriplegic. Dr. Gordon says it felt like being in a tornado. His thoughts were a chaotic whirlwind rushing around him. He says he prayed harder than he's ever prayed before, and that's when it hit him. Peace, and the knowledge that his family did have the strength to face this. In this audio interview, you'll hear all about his amazing story of courage, love, and the power of positive thinking, along with the book that resulted from it all, No Storm Lasts Forever, Transforming Suffering into Insight. And you'll also hear examples of how to use the falls in life as a way to propel yourself to a new level. You'll also learn the crazy way Dr. Gordon got Kenny Loggins to write an endorsement for his book, and two other stories that may have you rethinking the coincidence that happened in your life. You'll learn a hard lesson Dr. Gordon says he learned as a physician about how and where true healing occurs. You'll hear the real reason bad things happen to us in life. Believe it or not, we're not being punished. There are actually tools. You'll also learn why Dr. Gordon says spiritual growth is the most important thing in life and why he says everything else doesn't mean squat. You'll also hear the two main reasons heart failure happens to children, the signs to look for, and why Dr. Gordon has fought so hard to get automated external defibrillators in every school. Dr. Gordon says crap happens to everyone, and although it's hard to see tragic events as life's gifts, that's really what they are. It's not only possible to transform suffering into insight, but you can also use it to propel your life into something amazing. And in this amazing audio interview, you'll hear how. Now let's get going.
Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Senoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. So if you know anyone struggling with their weight, with cancer, diabetes, ADHD, autism, heart disease, or other health issues, send them over to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Today we are talking with Dr. Terry Gordon, a Cleveland Clinic-trained cardiologist practicing within mainstream medicine for over two decades. Named the American Heart Association's National Physician of the Year in 2002, Dr. Gordon is nationally recognized in matters of the heart. He is the author of the new book, No Storm Lasts Forever, Transforming Suffering into Insight, published by Hay House. And you can find out more about this amazing new book at drterrygordon.com. Dr. Gordon, thank you so much for joining us.
Chris, it's marvelous to be here. Thanks for having me.
So your new book, No Storm Lasts Forever, Transforming Suffering into Insight, shares a very personal tragedy that occurred in your life. I'm wondering if you can share what happened to you and your family and how it inspired No Storm Lasts Forever.
Well, Chris, this was about 3 years ago, and I was up in my office doing a little work, and my daughter, Maddie Rose, had just driven home from Chicago. We live in Ohio. She's been working up there as a teacher. And, you know, it's a parent's sixth sense when they can kind of feel something's not quite right with their child. And she had this heavy sadness dripping from her. And I said, "What's up, sweetie?" And so she came around my desk and plopped down at my feet and put her arms up on my knees and said, "You know, Dada." Now, mind you, she's 27 years old, still calls me Dada. She says, "You know, Dada, I always thought that the older I got and the more control I assumed over my life, the easier life would become." And then with a single tear trickling down her cheek and a deep sigh, she said, "You know, it's just not working out that way." And I pulled her up into my arms, and I rocked her as I had for 27 years. And I knew that what I was about to say to her would be important. And I said, "You know, darling, I don't think that's the way life is supposed to be. I think that if we are to progress in this thing we call life, if we are to become more enlightened, we must face greater and greater obstacles. And in fact, there's an expression from the Kabbalah, which is the ancient mystical text of Judaism, that says the falls of our life provide us the energy to propel us onto a higher path. It's the falls of our life." And I said, "You know, Maddie, you really should be grateful for the crap that happens to you." And I kissed her on the forehead and left it at that. The next morning at 6:40, I received one of the worst phone calls a parent could get. The grave voice on the other end of the line shared with me that our son Tyler was out in Durango, Colorado, going to school, had been involved in a near-fatal car accident, and he had shattered his neck. And then came the dreaded words, Chris, when this guy says, your son is quadriplegic. Well, you know, as a parent, you worry about those phone calls. You hope and pray they'll never happen. But when it comes, you just can't imagine the impact of those words. Well, I had about 20 seconds of denial, and immediately the doctor in me kicked in, and I knew what needed to be done. He was going to have to be life-flighted to Denver for emergency surgery to stabilize his neck. And within an hour, I'd hastily packed a bag and bolted up to the Cleveland, Ohio airport, trying to get on an overbooked nonstop flight to Denver so that I could get there before they took him into surgery. And somehow I got on the flight. I don't know how, there were five or six people in front of me. But I got on this flight, and I'm seated next to a window, and I was like a caged cat. My thoughts were so chaotic, it just was terrible. The thoughts were banging around inside my head so loudly that it hurt. And I felt like I was in this tornado, and it was loud, and it was whooshing, and it was cold, and it was wet, and I looked down the funnel, and it was just pure blackness, darkness. And it was so scary. And I remember praying harder than I'd ever prayed in my life. I didn't pray for me. I prayed for those I loved, for my son, to be able to help my wife and my children. And I remember saying over and over again in my mind, I can't do this. I can't do this. And gradually that loud whooshing darkness, coldness started to abate as I was being enveloped in this cocoon of white noise. And it was this place of unfathomable peace. And I kept saying, I can't do this. I can't do this. And I can't tell you, Chris, that I heard the voice of God, but the words were clear when God said, yes, you can. And I said, but how? I can't do this. And God said, understand that everything is in perfect order, even this. It was just yesterday that you gave your daughter wise counsel. You shared with her your truth. You can talk the talk, but now you must live it. And I reiterated again, how do I do this? And the most profound thing came to me, Chris, when God said, treat this as if it was something you had chosen. Now, why would I choose something like this? That was my first response. What possible good could come from such a life-altering calamity? What kind of lesson could possibly be hidden within this turmoil? And why are we as a family being asked to endure this anguish? What's the purpose of this negative experience? What I came to understand was, as I navigated this storm, the challenge for me became adjusting my perception of these events enough to recognize the presence of God within the experience. And in order to do that, I had to look beyond what my mind wanted to judge as good or bad. And I came to appreciate firsthand what I had shared with my daughter, that the gifts from the divine may not come enveloped in beautiful wrapping paper. In fact, the gift may be so disgustingly hideous that it's nearly impossible to comprehend how it could ever be of benefit. But a gift is what it is. And it's only by, again, overcoming those obstacles that you grow, mature, and get propelled to a higher path toward enlightenment.
That is such a powerful story, Dr. Gordon. And one of the things that fascinates me with your story, here you'd spent much of your life working in these very critical cardiac situations as a physician and life or death moments, I'm sure, all the time. And now here you are as a parent going through this experience of life or death and recovery. And, you know, often you're referred to as the wounded healer. I'd like to hear, like, what that means to you. And then also, what was it like to have those two roles, to be a physician and a parent? And, you know, how did it help you and how did it hinder you with this experience with your son, Tyler?
Well, you know, first of all, I would say I always strove to sympathize with my patients, to feel their pain. I couldn't empathize because I didn't have heart disease myself, but I always felt the strong urge to do that. But when I graduated from medical school, my wife, Angela, she crafted me this embroidery with the following words on it. It was, treat each of your patients as a lover. Feel his pain, his loneliness, his fear. You will suspect everything and miss nothing. Like it or not, you will be loved as you love. And that was in my office from the first day I went into practice. In Greek mythology, Chiron was the wisest of the centaurs. And he was in battle and was wounded by an arrow that had been dipped in Hydra's blood. And he became very ill. And the resultant lifelong anguish that he experienced set him out on a journey of discovery in search of his own cure. And along the way, he discovered how to heal others. found that by teaching others the art of healing, he himself found a haven of healing for himself. Now, Chiron came to understand what his patients were experiencing because he himself had felt the same pain. When I first went into practice, I used to think that I shouldn't get emotionally involved with my patients. In fact, my mother even suggested that I shouldn't become a physician because I wouldn't be able to handle losing a patient, and I was a very sensitive person. But I also learned that although objectivating the experience makes one perhaps more efficient, it also removes the humanity from the service to others. And Carl Jung, I think, best explained it when he said the doctor is effective only when he himself is affected. Only the wounded physician heals. And that's where this wounded healer, you know, when someone first described me as that, I felt a little uncomfortable. But what I found is that it's through surviving the personal pain and turmoil of challenging sufferings that one acquires great wisdom and healing skills. And these tools can't be learned from reading a book. These can't be learned in classes. It's only by living life that these special skills can be learned, only from experiencing the pain yourself. And what I found is that I used to think I had a lot to say, not until this. And this experience has propelled me so fast on this path. Probably shouldn't share this with you, but my wife said to me that perhaps, and I may get a little emotional here, that the reason my son had his accident was so this book could be written. It's a book that shares with people that even in the midst of what you call a tragedy, and a tragedy is only a tragedy if you decide to make it one, the real tragedy is experiencing something like this and not learning from it. So the story behind the story is that there's really no such thing as a negative experience. Every experience is beneficial. May not be such a pretty one, may not be a lot of fun, but it's a gift.
For more interviews on health, mind, body, and spirit, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. So what actually happened? You got that call that Tyler had been in an accident, and you went to the hospital. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about was the HIPAA. Because at one point in the story, in No Storm Lasts Forever, there's an account, and we went through this ourselves, so I feel for you. Tyler had said to the people in the emergency room, "Don't bother my parents."
And guess what? They didn't. And I asked to talk to the doctors, and you know what? They would talk to me. But that's going to be the topic of another book. But that shows the independence of my son. I mean, he wanted to do this by himself. Well, it would have been pretty difficult to do it by himself. That
right.
Independence, when it comes out, he's going to soar. He's just going to fly. Well, he's quadriplegic, and I'm really not going to get into the specifics of what he can and can't do because that's his request. But we were out in Denver for 4 months in rehab at Craig Hospital, which is a phenomenal facility. And, you know, he's moving along, but it's a tough road to hoe. It's a difficult thing. You know, he's now 24, and everything that defined who he was is no longer. My dear friend Wayne Dyer, you know, we talk at least once a week or two, and he's always saying, "Now tell Tyler he's so much more than his body." And that's one of the lessons in this book. You know, our ego tells us that we're very important. The way we look, our stature, the clothes we wear, you know, how many ripped muscles we have, totally unimportant. And the most important thing is Tyler still has his marvelous mind. And sometimes it does take time. Actually, the first trip I took home from Colorado, and I hadn't thought about home at all up until the moment I got ready to get on the airplane, and I got very emotional because I didn't want to leave Tyler in Denver. I was in line getting ready to check in, and there was this gentleman in front of me who was in a wheelchair. He was paraplegic, and he was kidding with the agent about how he's always been enamored with taller women. Well, she wasn't that tall, but from his perspective, looking up, she was, you know, and they were just laughing and having a good time, and he got out of the line. I took care of my stuff and went over to him, and I said, "You know, I wish my son could see your smile." And he said, "Why?" And I just broke down in tears, you know, with this total stranger. And he's there kind of patting my shoulder, you know, consoling me. And he said, "Well, tell me about Tyler and his injury." And I told him what had happened and what he couldn't do and what he used to do. And this guy was just kind of shaking his head like, "Yeah, I know." And he shared with me that he had been involved in an altercation and was shot in the back when he was 19. And he said, "I knew immediately I was going to be paralyzed for life." And he said, "I'm not going to tell you the first couple of years were easy. They weren't. They were pure hell." And then he made the most profound statement, and yet the most simple statement, when he said, "But, you know, at some point, Tyler's just going to have to get over it." And it's so true. At some point in time, a nanosecond, there will be a change in the way my son thinks. Wayne often says, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And it's so true. That's what happened to me on the airplane. It set me off on a totally different path. And that's what will happen. I'm mature at some point with my son. He'll get to the point where he'll say, okay, this is it, make the most of it, and off we go. And it'll happen. And his bullheadedness and independence and brilliant mind will take him.
So, Dr. Gordon, the other thing that you talk about is when someone has had a life-altering experience through injury or disease, something that changes their entire life, their family's life, what kind of things do you suggest? What can make things a little easier? We've talked a little bit about some ideas, but what else can you offer?
Well, I think the most important thing is finding the peace in the midst of the quagmire. When adversity comes our way, how we respond to that difficulty is much more important than what has happened to us. Now, in the midst of it, what has happened to us is the most important thing. But in truth, it's what we do with it, how we distill it, how we respond to it. That determines the outcome, who we're going to become. And, you know, when faced with these overwhelming challenges, usually it's doubt that enters one's mind. Confidence is replaced, and the suffering itself that people feel can be absolutely paralyzing. And, you know, it's easy to become discouraged by the loss of independence, having to rely on others, especially in my son's case, the loneliness that's created by that, the feelings of loss. But whether it's loss of the use of part of your body, loss of your autonomy, or loss of your portfolio, or of a job, or of a spouse, or a relationship, those same feelings of fear are what further paralyze us and then cause what's left in our life to be even worse. So that I think the message would be search for the meaning of your life. And I fervently believe that bad things don't happen to us because we deserve. I don't embrace at all that we've done something in a previous life or that we're bad people and that we're being punished. My outlook is life isn't unfair. It's always fair. And the gift, as I mentioned before, each of these seemingly negative experiences is a tool that helps to propel us onto that higher path. And having accepted that premise regarding Tyler's injury, I look at it as a loving, magnanimous gift from God. I personally would never have grown the way I've grown. Tyler would never, ever grow the way he's growing, not having faced something like this. You know, cushy is fun, but it never promotes growth. You've got to go through the turmoil in order to grow.
And you're certainly someone that walks the talk. You have retired pretty much from your cardiology practice to help care for your son, as I understand.
Well, I actually fell off of a ladder and it injured my neck, which is an interesting thing that I haven't put into enough thought to write about, but it was at the same level of Tyler's injury, and somewhere there's a message in there. But I learned an interesting lesson from that. I have a good friend who is a practitioner of Chinese medicine, and the first time I ever met him, you know, he said, I understand you had a close head injury and neck injury, and I told him about it. He said, did you learn the lesson? I said, what lesson? He said, you probably went back to work the next day, didn't you? I said, yeah, I did. And I did. I went back into work with a concussion and a neck collar. And I shared with him, I said, I haven't told you about my first closed head injury. About 6 years before that, I fell off of a horse, hit my head, and developed double vision. Went back to work the next day. And then he said the most profound thing to me. He said, it's obvious you haven't learned the lesson. Your next closed head injury is going to be a doozy. And it will get your attention.
And I'm wondering, how much do you think faith or a spiritual foundation contributes to your current outlook on life?
Life has a way of preparing you for what's about to happen. And my preparation started probably 10 or 12 years before that, if not longer. I just didn't recognize it. My guru, Wayne Dyer, had written a couple books, and I had read them, and I tried to call him to thank him for helping me and never got in touch with him. And about 2 years later, I took my wife out to Maui, and she developed shingles right before we left, and she was just as sick as she could be. So she was in bed on this first trip of a lifetime for us. And I was out on the beach, tried to meditate and couldn't. I was kind of walking back to the room, kicking the sand, and guess who I bumped into? Wayne Dyer. Now, that doesn't just happen. There's no such thing as coincidences. What that experience did for me is it opened up my eyes. I mean, I was a scientist. You prove it to me, then I'll believe it. So I always walked around saying, I'll believe it when I see it. I changed the thought to I'll see it when I believe it. And it's a totally different paradigm, a totally different way of looking at things. And when you open your mind to the possibilities that are out there that exist everywhere, it changes everything in your life. And that extrapolates into every aspect of your life. In this book, one of the first chapters, I quote lyrics from a Kenny Loggins song. I love Kenny Loggins. And it's Cody's song. It was a song that he composed and sang saying to his young son, basically, I'll be there to sing to you, don't be afraid. Those lyrics were always in my mind as I was writing this book. About a year and a half ago, I had already written that chapter. I'm in a small airport in Louisiana, a delayed flight for about 3 hours. We get ready to get on the airplane. This guy behind me says, hey, man, sure hope this doesn't mess up our connections in Houston. And I turned around and I looked at this guy and I said, man, you look an awful lot like Kenny Loggins. And he goes, I'm Kenny Loggins. Now, that doesn't just happen. And I shared with him, you know, I haven't asked you yet if I can use it, but I'm using your lyrics. And, you know, we got to talking, and he ended up writing an endorsement for the book. So when you open your mind to possibilities, miraculous things happen. And there is a quote from A Course in Miracles. I'm going to paraphrase it. Basically, it says, miracles are always around us. It's when they don't occur that something is terribly wrong. It's all in opening your mind to possibility and raising those antennae off the top of your head to pick up, to perceive. So for me, the spiritual journey has been a marvelous one, continues to be, and it's an integral one. And faith in a higher being, yielding to that higher power, has offered me the strength to endure this often ravaging storm.
And one of the things, Dr. Gordon, that you mentioned is Dr. Wayne Dwyer is a very big mentor and now, of course, a friend to you. Were you interested in reading his work before this tragedy occurred, or was this kind of afterwards? How did this fit into the picture in your inspiration for No Storm Lasts Forever?
Well, again, I first met him in 2002 after I had already read a couple of his books that inspired me, Real Magic and a book called Inspiration, Living in Spirit. So I had read a couple of his books. I actually read one of his first books back in the 70s, Your Erroneous Zones. I was one of those schnooks that thought it was Your Erogenous Zones. So I bought this book for the wrong reason, you know? Crazy. But I read it. I read the book, and it was a very, very good book. He's been there for 30, 40 years in my life. I just didn't open my eyes until 10 years ago. So it's never too late. But earlier, you get started on this spiritual journey. I used to think, Chris, that, you know, I would wait to do this spiritual stuff once everything else was in perfect order. And who was it? John Lennon that said, life is what happens to you when you're busy making other plans. You can't wait to do that. You shouldn't wait to do that. That is the most important thing for us to do on this earth, and that is to nurture that spiritual growth. And the busyness of every day, the material things that we think are so important don't mean squat. It's that spiritual enrichment, that nurturing, that is so important.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. So, Dr. Gordon, do you believe that we need these challenges in life to spiritually awaken?
Unequivocally. Now, can you do it without it? I would imagine you can. But, you know, crap happens to everybody. None of us are immune to that. You know, who was it? Ernest Hemingway, I think, that said, life breaks us all, but for some, we become stronger in the broken places. And that's really the way I believe it is. You know, it's like in weight training, you know, when you're lifting weights, you got to break down muscle. You got to tear it down to the core and then be patient to allow it to regenerate and become even stronger than it was before you started working out. So I believe all of these obstacles are so important. Carl Perkins, I think, once said, if it weren't for the rocks in its bed, the stream would have no song. And I think it's the same thing with us. The gifts that God gives us, and we may not ever understand them completely, those are those stones in the water that make the sound of life so beautiful.
In No Storm Lasts Forever, it's a very moving account of what your family goes through and what you go through as a father and as a physician and your wife during your son Tyler's accident. I know there's people out there listening that may be going through this, or they may be wanting to try and prepare for if it ever happens to them. What are some of the most important things parents can do if the loved one is in some kind of situation like this, an accident?
Hope. Once you lose that hope, then you're lost. I can tell you that. And my wife was marvelous with this. She, nor did Tyler, did not want to hear the word quadriplegic. Don't mention that word to me. In fact, Wayne implored us, don't listen to anybody that tells you that your son is quadriplegic. Now, that doesn't mean that you bury your head in the sand, but it's that power of positive thinking. You know, what my posture was, I prayed for healing. I didn't ask God or qualify what kind of healing I wanted. I just prayed for healing with the understanding that we are so much more than our body. So whatever happens to our body is really, I don't want to say inconsequential, but in the overall scheme of things, we are spiritual beings having just a temporary human experience. And on either side of that human experience, that spiritual aspect of us not only survives, but thrives. And it thrives for eternity before we were put into this body, and I believe it thrives for eternity after that spirit leaves this body. So the body is just a vessel. That vessel's going to break down. Something's going to happen to it. And my firm belief is that it's not what happens to us. It's what we do with it.
And also an awareness of, I would imagine, that we tend to put doctors and hospitals and the whole medical establishment on a pedestal as if they know all the answers. And it would seem to me important that one maintains that feeling of hope and also questioning.
Well, I had an interesting experience. There was a patient that died during an operation. And when it happened, the strangest thought crossed my mind. I was not the surgeon, but I was in the operating room shortly thereafter. And the strangest thought crossed my mind. Do you remember that movie, City of Angels? There was a female cardiovascular surgeon, and she lost a patient. And, you know, she's mad at everybody. She's throwing instruments around, and she storms out of the room, blaming everybody else for this man's death. And she ends up in a stairwell, sobbing. And she's saying, but I've done this the same way 1,000 times. Why did I lose this patient? And at that, Nicolas Cage, who was her guardian angel, touches her forehead. She doesn't feel it, can't see it. But then she, at that moment, comes to the realization she's not in control. And I learned that. I wasn't in control. I was a vehicle. I was a tool being used by the divine to help in the healing of patients. But what I found was that healing didn't occur where I thought it did. It occurs in a totally different space, and that is in the spiritual realm, not in the physical realm. Maybe curing a disease might occur in the physical realm, but the healing occurs in the spiritual realm.
Dr. Gordon, aside from writing this incredible book about your experience with your son, you are quite an active health advocate. One of the things you're working on is getting AEDs, automated external defibrillators, placed in Ohio schools and police cars, and you've gotten honored as Physician of the Year by the American Heart Association for your work in that. What propelled you into that work?
Well, this is around the same time that the spiritual development started in me. Josh Miller, a 15-year-old high school football player from our community, ran off the field one Friday night, and he collapsed in front of the bleachers, and in front of his teammates, and in front of his friends, and sadly, in front of his parents. Josh Miller died of cardiac arrest. And that's when the heart just suddenly starts to quiver like a bowl of jello. I had the unfortunate experience of watching the videotape of Josh's death. And, Chris, I've seen a lot in my career. This was the most sickening thing I've ever seen in my life. In that normally boisterous stadium, you could hear a pin drop except for the wail of his mother. And for the first 3 or 4 minutes, they thought it was a neck injury. They didn't even think of it as being a heart-related problem. But he died of a cardiac arrest, and kids aren't supposed to do that. So shortly thereafter, I met with his father, Ken, and I was then president of our local chapter, the American Heart Association. And I vowed this wasn't going to happen again, that we were going to do something about it. And we had a conference, and there were radio, newspaper, and TV reporters there. And after the conference, our goal was to put AEDs in every junior high school and high school in our community and raise the money to do that. And a TV reporter shoved a camera and microphone in his face and said, well, you know, this is to Josh's dad. She said, well, you know, Mr. Miller, these AEDs, they cost almost $3,000 a piece. Don't you think that's a lot of money? And he looked down, and as he looked back up, he looked at me as he responded to her question. And he said, you know, doesn't seem like a lot of money to me. And it was just like a bolt of lightning that went through me, that I was being told, here's the ball, run with it. So we did. We succeeded in putting them in the junior and high schools. And then I thought, well, why stop in our community? How about the state? And I approached the state of Ohio. We convinced them to grant $5 million. We became the first comprehensive program in the country to place an AED, and we offered it in every school, K-12, public, private, parochial, charter. Not every school, by the way, accepted one, but 4,470 AEDs went into schools throughout the state of Ohio. So we filled most of the need. We trained 5 individuals in each school in CPR. Total of 15,000 people were trained in CPR and the use of the AED. We aligned them with their local paramedics and 911 service, and I'm pleased to report that we've had at least 15 saves as a result of that. The very day we completed that program, our U.S. Congresswoman, Betty Sutton, called me. The congratulate us on the initiative. And she said, you know, Terry, do you think we could do this on a national level? And I said, no, ma'am, I don't think we can. And I remember her disappointment. She said, oh, why? And I said, because I know we can. And Chris, I wasn't being cocky when I said that. It's called the power of intention. I could see that program as already being. All I had to do is make it happen. But I already saw it as complete. And within 6 months, she grabbed the baton from me and bolted with it and put forth the Josh Miller Hearts Act before the U.S. House of Representatives. And in June of 2008, it passed unanimously. Didn't make it through the Senate. Next year, it was proposed again. Didn't make it through the Senate. And it's back down on the floor of both the House, and our U.S. Senator, Sherrod Brown, has proposed it on the Senate side. This is a bill that would put an AED in every single school in the United States. And the reason this is important, first of all, every minute that someone's in a cardiac arrest, their chance of survival drops by 10%. And nationwide, the average response time of the paramedics is about 8 to 12 minutes. So if you do the math, 3 to 5% of people that have a cardiac arrest survive. If you do CPR, it doubles the chance of survival. If you do CPR and shock early with an AED, up to 50% survive. So this bill will place an AED in every school. The tragedy and the travesty of this is, since the bill first passed the U.S. House of Representatives in 2008, 206 children have died of a cardiac arrest in our schools as a direct result of there not being an AED there. And the thing that will absolutely nauseate you, if you walk through the halls of Congress, if you walk through the offices of the House of Representatives and the Senate, guess what's hanging on their walls? AEDs. Everywhere. So they're protected. Our most precious resources are not. You know, when there was this outrage, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, we were sending our troops into Afghanistan and Iraq with inadequate equipment. And there was this uproar. We're doing the same thing to our kids. We're putting them in harm's way out on the football fields, the soccer fields, the basketball courts, track, without an AED, without the proper equipment to save their lives. It's a no-brainer. And yet there is resistance, but we'll keep persevering.
But I'm interested to hear, though, Dr. Gordon, because I hadn't heard that this is a problem for children. Now, what causes heart failure in children?
There are different things that can happen to the heart. When a person goes into a cardiac arrest, it's a heart rhythm disturbance. It's where their heart electrically just starts to quiver like a bowl of Jell-O rather than pumping efficiently. Usually, it's a congenital heart defect that hasn't been diagnosed. And that was the case with Josh. But it also can occur from being struck in the chest. It's called commotio cordis. And if the heart, the chest, is struck by a football, by a baseball, by a soccer ball, lacrosse ball, at just the right moment, and there's a 2% area where it has to happen within that 2% in order to manifest into a cardiac arrest, then the same heart rhythm disturbance happens and cardiac arrest occurs. But the vast majority of youngsters that have cardiac arrest from a congenital, a structural abnormality that is usually not diagnosed. Josh was a perfect example. This kid played football through grade school and junior high, and it just so happened one night is when it hit. And, you know, again, had there been an AED there and if he'd been shocked right away, good possibility he would have survived.
So if parents want to see these machines in their schools, who do they contact? The Josh Miller Hearts Act, how do they get involved?
Their congressman or woman, their senators for their states. You know, the Good Samaritan law applies to this. So even if you haven't been trained in the use of an AED, anybody can use it. You know, we have federal laws mandating smoke detectors be in every building. Smoke detectors save about 6,000 lives a year. AEDs could save 50 to 100,000 lives. They're mandated to be in federal buildings. They're mandated to be on our airliners, the jets. There's a 25 times greater chance of having a cardiac arrest in a school than there is on a jetliner, and yet they're federally mandated there. We need to have them federally mandated to be everywhere. Shopping malls, high-rise buildings, golf courses, and as you mentioned, we put them in police cars. 80% of law enforcement responds to medical emergencies, and 60% of the time they get there before the paramedics do, delivering the shock 3.5 minutes earlier than if you wait for the paramedics. And that extrapolates into that person who is shocked by a cop has a 10 times greater chance of walking out of the hospital unscathed. So AEDs should be everywhere, but especially in our school.
So, Dr. Gordon, where can people go if they want to find out more about your work and your book? And then before you go, I also want to ask you about you have a new TV show coming out, a pilot called Renewal. But let's give them a place to go if they want to find out more about you.
Well, my website is www.drterrygordon.com. drterrygordon.com. Doctor is just D-R, no period behind it. And Terry is T-E-R-R-Y. Gordon is G-O-R-D-O-N.com. And on the website, you can order the book. You know, there are lots of interesting things in there that I believe can be very helpful for anyone who's dealing with loss or has a loved one who's dealing with loss or just living life and learning how to be accepting and appreciative of every single thing that happens to you. The new show that we're about to begin production on is called Renewal. And this is a show where we're going to be describing probably three different stories for each show. And the first third of each of the shows will be an introduction of life, just lollygagging along, just peachy cream, just having a good time, enjoying everything. And then the middle segment will be when the bottom drops out, when something supposedly tragic happens. And then the last third of it, the most important, this is the renewal part, is what is it that enables people in the midst of a calamity to come out of it, to pull themselves out of it? So the sweetest part of the story will be how people going through the trials and tribulations that many of us will have to face at some point, how they pull themselves out of it in hopes that that can help others to do the same.
That sounds very inspiring. And Dr. Gordon, we want to thank you so much for sharing No Storm Lasts Forever, Transforming Suffering into Insight with us. And we wish the best to Tyler and his recovery and look forward to hearing more about your work. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's the end of our interview, and I hope you've enjoyed it. For more great health-related interviews, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.